He saw the look, knit his heavy eyebrows, rubbed his hands, and marched abruptly away, saying he'd be back directly. No one had time to think of him again till, as Meg ran through the entry with a pair of rubbers in one hand and a cup of tea in the other, she came suddenly upon Mr. Brooke. "I'm very sorry to hear of this, Miss March," he said, in the kind, quiet tone which sounded very pleasantly to her perturbed spirit. "I came to offer myself as escort to your mother. Mr. Lawrence has commissions for me in Washington, and it will give me real satisfaction to be of service to her there." Down dropped the rubbers, and the tea was very near following, as Meg put out her hand, with a face so full of gratitude that Mr. Brooke would have felt repaid for a much greater sacrifice than the trifling one of time and comfort which he was about to make. "How kind you all are! Mother will accept, I'm sure, and it will be such a relief to know that she has someone to take care of her. Thank you very, very much." Meg spoke earnestly, and forgot herself entirely, till something in the brown eyes looking down at her made her remember the cooling tea and lead the way into the parlour, saying she would call her mother. Everything was arranged by the time Laurie returned, with a note from Aunt March, enclosing the desired sum, and a few lines repeating what she had often said before, that she had always told them it was absurd for March to go into the army, always predicted that no good would come of it, and she hoped they would take her advice next time. Mrs. March put the note in the fire, the money in her purse, and went on with her preparations, with her lips folded tightly, in a way which Joe would have understood if she had been there. The short afternoon wore away, all the other errands were done, and Meg and her mother busy at some necessary needlework, while Beth and Amy got tea, and Hannah finished her ironing with what she called a slap and a bang. But still Joe did not come. They began to get anxious, and Laurie went off to find her, for no one ever knew what freak Joe might take into her head. He missed her, however, and she came walking in with a very queer expression of countenance, for there was a mixture of fun and fear, satisfaction and regret in it, which puzzled the family as much as did the roll of bills she laid before her mother, saying with a little choke in her voice, "That's my contribution toward making Father comfortable and bringing him home."
"My dear, where did you get it? $25! Joe, I hope you haven't done anything rash."
"No, it's mine, honestly. I didn't beg, borrow, or steal it. I earned it. And I don't think you'll blame me, for I only sold what was my own." As she spoke, Jo took off her bonnet, and a general outcry arose, for all her abundant hair was cut short.
"Your hair! Your beautiful hair! Oh, Jo, how could you? Your one beauty! My dear girl, there was no need of this. She doesn't look like my Jo anymore, but I love her dearly for it."
As everyone exclaimed, and Beth hugged the cropped head tenderly, Jo assumed an indifferent air, which did not deceive anyone a particle, and said, rumpling up the brown bush and trying to look as if she liked it, "It doesn't affect the fate of the nation, so don't wail, Beth. It will be good for my vanity. I was getting too proud of my wig. It will do my brains good to have that mop taken off. My head feels deliciously light and cool, and the barber said I could soon have a curly crop, which will be boyish, becoming, and easy to keep in order. I'm satisfied, so please take the money and let's have supper."
"Tell me all about it, Joe. I am not quite satisfied, but I can't blame you, for I know how willingly you sacrificed your vanity, as you call it, to your love. But, my dear, it was not necessary, and I'm afraid you will regret it one of these days," said Mrs. March.
"No, I won't," returned Joe stoutly, feeling much relieved that her prank was not entirely condemned.
"What made you do it?" asked Amy,
who would as soon have thought of cutting off her head as her pretty hair.
"Well, I was wild to do something for Father," replied Joe, as they gathered about the table, for healthy young people can eat even in the midst of trouble. "I hate to borrow as much as Mother does, and I knew Aunt March would croak. She always does if you ask for a ninepence. Meg gave all her quarterly salary toward the rent, and I only got some clothes with mine, so I felt wicked and was bound to have some money if I sold the nose off my face to get it.
You needn't feel wicked, my child. You had no winter things and got the simplest with your own hard earnings, said Mrs. March, with a look that warmed Joe's heart.
I hadn't the least idea of selling my hair at first, but as I went along I kept thinking what I could do, and feeling as if I'd like to dive into some of the rich stores and help myself.
In a barber's window I saw tails of hair with the prices marked, and one black tail, not so thick as mine, was $40.
It came over me all of a sudden that I had one thing to make money out of, and without stopping to think, I walked in, asked if they bought hair and what they would give for mine.
"I don't see how you dared to do it," said Beth in a tone of awe.
"Oh, he's a little man who looked as if he merely lived to oil his hair. He rather stared at first, as if he wasn't used to having girls bounce into his shop and ask him to buy their hair. He said he didn't care about mine. It wasn't the fashionable color, and he never paid much for it in the first place. The work put into it made it dear, and so on. It was getting late, and I was afraid, if it wasn't done right away, that I shouldn't have it done at all. And you know, when I start to do a thing, I hate to give it up. So I begged him to take it, and told him why I was in such a hurry. It was silly, I dare say, but it changed his mind, for I got rather excited, and told the story in my topsy-turvy way, and his wife heard, and said so kindly, 'Take it, Thomas, and oblige the young lady. I'd do as much for our Jimmy any day if I had a spire of hair worth selling.'
"'Who was Jimmy?' asked Amy, who liked to have things explained as they went along.
"'Her son,' she said, who was in the army. "'How friendly such things make strangers feel, don't they? She talked away all the time the man clipped, and diverted my mind nicely.'
"'Didn't you feel dreadfully when the first cut came?' asked Meg, with a shiver.
"'I took a last look at my hair while the man got his things, and that was the end of it. I never snivel over trifles like that. I will confess, though, I felt queer when I saw the dear old hair laid out on the table, and felt only the short, rough ends of my head. It almost seemed as if I'd an arm or a leg off.
The woman saw me look at it, and picked out a long lock for me to keep.
I'll give it to you, Marmy, just to remember past glories by. For a crop is so comfortable, I don't think I shall ever have a mane again.
Mrs. March folded the wavy chestnut lock and laid it away with the short grey one in her desk. She only said, "Thank you, dearie." But something in her face made the girls change the subject and talk as cheerfully as they could about Mr. Brooks' kindness, the prospect of a fine day tomorrow, and the happy times they would have when Father came home to be nursed. No one wanted to go to bed when at 10 o'clock Mrs. March put by the last finished job and said, "Come, girls." Beth went to the piano and played the father's favorite hymn. All began bravely, but broke down one by one till Beth was left alone, singing with all her heart, for to her music was always a sweet consoler. "Go to bed and don't talk, for we must be up early, and shall need all the sleep we can get." "Good night, my darlings," said Mrs. March, as the hymn ended, for no one cared to try another. They kissed her quietly, and went to bed as silently as if the dear invalid lay in the next room. Beth and Amy soon fell asleep in spite of the great trouble, but Meg lay awake, thinking the most serious thought she had ever known in her short life. Joe lay motionless, and her sister fancied that she was asleep, till a stifled sob made her exclaim, as she touched a wet cheek.
"Joe, dear, what is it? Are you crying about Father?"
"No, not now."
"What then?"
My hair," burst out poor Joe, trying vainly to smother her emotion in the pillow. It did not sound at all comical to Meg, who kissed and caressed the afflicted heroine in the tenderest manner.
"I'm not sorry," protested Joe with a choke. "I'd do it again tomorrow if I could. It's only the vain, selfish part of me that goes and cries in this silly way. Don't tell anyone. It's all over now.
I thought you were asleep, so I just made a little private moan for my one beauty. How came you to be awake?
I can't sleep.